The executive producer for this episode of Walnut Grovecast is Jenny Comer. Hello and welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. For the next couple months, Walnut Grovecast is returning to a weekly schedule. Along with Walnut Grovecast, I am working hard to finish up episodes of Bonnet Heads and the Little House Book Club. Included in those side projects are more of your favorites, such as Wagon Talks, character discussions, interviews with cast members, and so much more. By now, you must have read Kelly Mielke's hilarious addition to the website, The Prairie Review. If not, please visit walnutgrovecast.com, and it's right there. It's right on top. As always, these shows and articles are not only free of charge, they are commercial-free. I would like to thank the following supporters for making that possible. Michelle Ferguson, Aaron McManus, Chelsea Wofford, Marissa Baker, Brandon Letulier, Leah Chiapino, Cheryl Van Dusen, Thori Rodriguez, Angie Zadava, Cheyenne Hampton, Chris Hassler from the VHS Rewind podcast, Laura Solarin, Dean Almanzo Butler, Spunky Cheek, Dana Wilkins, Chantel Dubois Nishiyama, Melissa Halfpint Gilbert, Suzanne Holland, Leah Mitchell from the Retro TV podcast, Michelle Tarrier, Brian C. Mellenbacher, Margaret LaVisca, Jennifer Jones, Julia Schroeder, Tanya Weber, Leah Chiapino, JJ Hurley, Elizabeth Villamagna, Robin Lee, Matilda Smith Thompson, Shannon Quinton, Lydia Kikuchi from Late Nights with Hitchcock podcast, Elvira Dabas, Candy Gleason, Megan Eichner, Kelly Mielke from the Dr. Quincast podcast, Alicia Olin, Rachel Boren, Stephanie Carnes, Julia Monin, The No Agenda podcast, Peyton England, Matthew Mercier, Stacey Keller, Bobby Young, Teresa Trapp, Jeannie Schneider-Mitchell, Max Duration, Katie Bollinger, Whitney Cole, Laura Furman, Val Williams, Ann Quinn, Jeannie Comer, Aaron Wortman, Don Roberts, Rebecca Harris, Sherry Benner, Angela Bowen from the Looking Back on My Wonder Years, A Wonder Years podcast, Susan King, Jeff Griffin, Megan Parker, Brian Sellers, Stephanie Bailey, Andre Yarkison, Rhonda Ludwig, Stacey Corrigan, Whitney Griggs, Julia Jin, Jill Stellman, and finally Chris Cooling from the Forgotten TV podcast. Thank you all for your support. You make this podcast possible, and in my eyes, this is truly your podcast. So if you have any ideas, suggestions, please feel free to reach out. If you would like to support Walnut Grovecast, please visit patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Without further delay, please enjoy the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Difficulties right off the bat. Hello, this is Mark, and you are listening to Walnut Grovecast. Today I have a very special guest. Many of you might recognize her from other things that she's been involved in. Marissa Baker, how are you doing?
I'm good, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on and review an episode of Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, super glad to be here.
Yeah, me too. We finally connected and everything, and my schedule's been kind of wacky, but this is the month where I'm doing so much Little House recording, and I'm just happy to be kind of doing it. You know, I do these other podcasts, and I love those shows as well. It's just, there's something about Little House that really just reminds me of my childhood, and it kind of, it's like a palate cleanser.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And so do you want to talk about the episode we are reviewing tonight?
Yeah, today we're reviewing Once Upon a Time, and that's season 9, episode 15.
Yeah, it is all the way back in 1983, which is such a long time ago, on January 24th. And one of the things I noticed right off the bat with the intro of this episode, and I'm not sure if this is something that many people are noticing. I don't know. I'm seeming to notice like a lot of stuff that, and just pointing out all these kind of weird little things. At some point they removed the outhouse from the little house, and I don't know what happened to it. I mean, it used to be the gag where Carrie would run to the outhouse, right? This isn't an imaginative thing that I'm making up. It was a running gag, but in the opening credits of this episode, this is the new season. You know, this is of course season 9. You know, it has like the opening with the yellow flowers, and there's no outhouse. So I don't know what they're doing.
I've never noticed that, actually.
I didn't notice it on this particular part until today. This was my third viewing this week of it, and I was just like, where's the bathroom? So yeah, it's a chicken coop. There's a chicken coop and a little house, and I don't know. If somebody knows, that'd be great. But it's one of those things I'm starting to pay more and more attention to.
I guess they just got it run down the street to Laura and Manly's.
or like a 7-Eleven down the road or something. Well, we open up in the little house with a limping Miss Plum. And do we have a backstory as to why she's limping? We know Albert didn't do anything to her foot, even though he did slap her.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I don't think they ever really go into detail about how she hurt it.
But yeah, she's on crutches, and pretty modern-looking crutches, too. I just want to add that little thing. Maybe she really had a sprained ankle or something. I'm not really sure. It's not the most important aspect of the story, except to make it so that Laura was the substitute teacher.
Right, and so, you know, Allison Arngrim actually broke her arm back in the old episodes. And they used that.
That's right. They used it in the plot line, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, it's... What do you think of Ms. Plum? I mean, we know she's Leslie Land, and we know she's, you know... she is royalty on the set. But what do you think of her as a school marm and actress?
I mean, I think she does a pretty good job.
Yeah, me too.
As far as it being the teacher.
She's one of my favorites, actually. I mean... In some ways, yeah. I like her more than Ms. Wilder, than Eliza Jane.
Yeah.
I like Eliza Jane's character a lot. But as a school teacher, I think Miss Plum seems more like a school teacher.
Yeah, she doesn't write the grades on the board and, you know, humiliate kids.
She really did do a lot of humiliating, right?
Alice Garvey did, for sure.
Oh, my God. She's got a lot of problems. But here we go. She comes limping into class, just being disruptive. Actually, she wasn't. She waited until the class was over. Laura was teaching, had the entire attention of everyone, right? Everybody is like raising their hands and are all just really paying a lot of attention to Laura, which is really just a nice thing to see, right? Even Willie.
Yeah. Hard to believe with Willie.
Yeah, it is. But here we go.
Hi. So,
Wilder?
Hi. How's your ankle?
Doc Baker says it's much better.
Will you be coming back to school soon?
Tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
That's wonderful.
In the meantime, I've heard your assignment for tomorrow, so I suggest you waste no time getting at it.
Bye. Bye, Miss Plum.
Bye.
Bye,
Miss Plum.
You see Nancy walk up to her, kick her in the leg. See you tomorrow.
That's probably what happened, honestly.
Yeah. Actually, she gave her a nice, like, see you tomorrow, Miss Plum. Oh, Nancy.
Laura will let me get away with whatever I want.
Yeah, that's her.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate your taking over. It's been a burden, I know, with all your duties at home.
Nonsense. I enjoyed it, really.
I could tell. I heard you. You're a fine teacher, Laura.
Thank you.
She's like, I know. What are you telling me? I'm Laura Ingalls. Wilder. So, yeah, I mean, but Laura's a little bit bittersweet about the returning of Miss Plum, of course. You know, she kind of fell in love with being the teacher. And some of these clips that I made are kind of long, but I just think they're important. We have Jenny at the table. We have Manly or Almanzo. And they're just kind of just hanging out. So here's Laura.
Rose is finally asleep.
You must be pretty tired.
No, not really.
Well, tomorrow you can sleep in.
Now, what's weird is, you know, Amanda's like sitting there and he's like, you must be very tired. He sounds exhausted, right? He's like, let me just have another cup of coffee. Like, go to sleep, man. What is with you?
You've been putting in a lot of double duty lately.
He has the hairiest arm I've ever seen on a blonde guy. Holy cow. I don't you know, are you watching along or no?
No, I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, but you got to take my word for it then.
Oh, I do.
Manly, I don't want to sleep in. You know what I want to do? I want to go back to that school tomorrow and I want to teach.
Got to beat up Miss Plum.
So what is sleeping in for them? Is that like 5 a.m. instead of 4 a.m.?
You know what? Probably. I mean, well, what would be her responsibilities? I mean, she would have to get up for the baby. To get, you know, make lunch for Jenny, make lunch for Zaldamo.
Clean the town outhouse.
Clean the chicken coop. That's sleeping in. That's her mark. That is sleeping in.
I know.
I didn't realize what a good teacher you are. I am.
It's just funny. I didn't realize because, you know, even when you were my teacher...
Yeah.
So you think you're a good teacher? Just kind of so one of those kind of surprising type of things. But she goes on.
I am a good teacher. I'm not saying that out of vanity either. It's just that I need it. I mean, I love being a wife and a mother. But it's just not all of me. Having a profession.
Well, now's as good a time as any to get started.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means I've been waiting for a whole week to find you in this kind of state.
What he does, do you want to talk about what he does? I can if you want. It's fine.
Yeah, go ahead. You can go ahead.
He has this like pamphlet for a contest where you can write a poem, a short story, even a novel, and submit it for a contest. So... It really resonates with Laura. You know, it's one of those things that she's kind of always wanted to do with her remembrance books. We hear so much about them.
Mm-hmm.
And she decides to get a table, put it outside, put an apple out there, and to write. You know, I mean, it's one of those things that maybe a lot of people want to do, and they just don't have that opportunity to focus on it. But I thought it was a nice shot of her kind of just writing and spending time focused on, you know, writing this novel.
Yeah, and she does mention here in a second that it took her less than 4 weeks to finish it.
Yeah, I'm going to play that, and it's kind of interesting. Now, one thing that stood out to me, and I'm wondering if you might know, or I'm sure other people who might be listening to this episode would know, are there other episodes with voiceovers in the middle of the episode? Because normally they're at the end.
I'm not sure. I do know, you know, the one where she meets Almanzo.
Who?
That there's one at the end.
You mean Almanzo, I think that's his name.
Manly.
Manly is acceptable. But, yeah, so here, listen to it. And just listen how out of place it is for the middle, well, the beginning of the episode.
It took less than 4 weeks for me to finish the novel.
She's a braggart, don't you think? She's just like, you know, you take me 4 weeks to write this.
I mean, she's a little full of herself this episode, let's be honest.
A little bit. Yeah, I'd say so.
Then it was time to read it to Jenny and Almanzo. I can't remember being more nervous than I was that night.
Now this, of course, she's reading the actual... from the actual end of the first book. And so I think it was a nice addition. The problem that I have with this episode is people will watch this and they think, oh, that must be the way it is. Even though they have their little addition at the very end, they think like this is the factual way that all of this happened. And it just didn't like this, you know?
Right. And so this is our little disclaimer to tell everybody that they need to go read the books.
Yeah. Or head over to Little House Book Club, where we basically describe the entire book. Yeah.
She looked at Ma, gently rocking and knitting. She thought to herself, this is now. She was glad that the cozy house and Pa and Ma and the firelight and the music were now. They could not be forgotten, she thought. Because now is now. It can never be a long time ago.
And Jenny and Manly love it. Like, they start applauding, they jump up, they have, like, a glitter cannon. They're like, this is amazing. It's going to change the world. Got to publish it. But no, they really love it. And just like all of us really, well, most of us might really love the book. And it makes sense. Like, I guess in this like type of story, she gets a letter after her submission that they want to see her in Minneapolis. I've never been there. Have you?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the place.
And I were on our way to Minneapolis. They didn't say I won, but they wanted to see me. I had butterflies in my stomach for the whole trip.
So, yeah, we're getting another city thing in this entire episode. We get some new sets. I'd say this episode was a pretty complicated episode to film. This isn't like your normal one.
And they didn't reuse the whole fountain thing, did they?
No, there was. I don't think there was even a fountain to be seen in this particular episode, but I wish I paid more attention because there could have been. It would have been really kind of interesting. Now, she gets to the office. It's all like kind of super modern. And the first thing I see is a fern, which is just hilarious.
Of course.
And then I see another fern. This guy has more plants in his office. It's amazing. And there's one huge fern that's right behind the couch. And I'm just, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of funny. These have to be plastic. They have to be.
Yeah, because how could they afford all this? I mean, how much money do they have in their plant budget?
Well, you know, you get the 2-for-1 price. Yeah, maybe it's like $10, you know, and you get two whole ferns. I forget where I was. It was like some, like a nursery, and they had these racks of plants, and he just had one of just ferns. And I'm like, who buys ferns? Just, it's a weird looking plant to me. That's why it stands out, is it kind of really reminds me of the 70s and so much. I'm pretty sure we had ferns in my house in like one of these like macrame rope things that were just kind of hanging from the ceiling. If you've ever seen macrame.
I wouldn't really know. I wasn't born in the 70s. Yeah. But
you've seen movies. So
true.
You have to take my word for it then. But yeah, so it's a very super fancy publisher, and they're just kind of whining and dining her in a lot of ways. So this is going to be the beginning.
My chief editor, Russell Matthews. This is Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Well, I enjoyed your book, Mrs. Wilder.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews.
Well, please, sit down, sit down. Be comfortable. Now, let's get right to the point. Russell and I both feel that your manuscript should take first prize and be published.
Woo-hoo.
Well, that's wonderful.
However, there always seems to be a however, doesn't there? We feel that your manuscript is about 80%.
It's 20% terrible. I mean, it's essentially what they're telling her, right?
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah, this gets a little sketchy and a little bit strange and kind of like, it's weird. Publishing can really be this way, depending on what genre you're writing for and stuff like that. But usually when you're writing about your own life, they don't, you know, I can't say that it doesn't happen, but it, the way that they approach it, it just seems so sketchy. And she was smart to read over her contract. I'll say that.
Yeah. Didn't you work for a publisher?
Yeah, I worked for a children's publisher, Scholastic and Entertainment and Media. And so I was around a lot of like concepts coming to fruition in books. And they really, I mean, with Scholastic's a good example of a company that would be kind of hands-off when it really comes to tweaking books, for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows if, you know, at the highest levels, maybe it's, you know, these kind of conversations may happen. But, you know, with, like, J.K. Rowling and stuff like that, I didn't really kind of see them kind of tweaking. I can't imagine them speaking to, like, Philip Pullman and saying, well, maybe we should change this around. But it's just one of those type of things where it, I'm sure it happens, but I haven't seen it happen really. Covers are a whole other thing. Usually, authors have like no control over covers, unless you're like, you know, J.K. Rowling. But yeah, like it, that's why covers suck so bad, because they just kind of hand it to like whoever's like not doing anything. Yeah.
Didn't they read you the covers for these books like a bunch of times over the years?
Wait, say it again.
Didn't they read you the covers?
Your audio is getting a little bit funky.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Can you hear me now?
A little bit. Keep talking.
I said the books over the years, didn't they redo the covers?
For Laura Ingalls Wilder, yes. They a number of, they brought in different artists for the entire run. I don't know the name. I never know the names of the people who did it, but two major artists work for, and then the newer ones are like this updated version that's colorized. And they just went through a lot of different changes. I don't know what the most recent look is. Probably just something really plain and scaled down. I wonder if it's still in hardcover. I'm curious if that's something that's still published. But yeah,
I don't know.
So they go on, they continue talking.
80%?
We have a good beginning and a good end. What's needed is a little more in between.
Oh, I see.
Other incidents from your childhood. I'm sure you can recall others of them.
Mr. Broxton, whoops. I have half a dozen notebooks in my luggage, and they're all filled with childhood memories.
Is that so?
Yes, I'm sure I'll have no trouble writing new chapters.
So we'll need three, wouldn't you say, Russell?
That'll do.
A half a dozen notebooks, you say?
What did you think of Russell? Like him, the, an editor he is, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's flat out creepy.
But did you feel that way right away?
No, I think he seemed kind of like a smooth talker.
Up to this point, I was fine with him. But I felt like almost like, I don't know, he seemed like he was doing the whole like looking her up and down type of thing. And then we get that one moment where it's like, what? What did you just say? Which is just awesome. It's the worst possible thing to do to somebody. But, so yeah, they go on.
Yes. I've even started working on a seventh.
That's very interesting. Very interesting. Russell and I were discussing how your book might be ideal for sequels.
Really?
That is, if we can find a good enough market to begin with.
I don't know what to say.
Well, first things first. We'll need the three chapters quickly. How fast can you write?
Well, how quickly do you need them?
In 2 weeks, they should be ready for publication.
2 weeks?
Is there a problem?
Well, I didn't think you'd need me here that long.
I'm afraid I should have been more explicit in my letter.
Well, there's no problem. I'll telephone my husband.
Good. Then we'll have a press.
It's funny, when she says, I'll telephone my husband, Russell looks like he just, like, has gas or something. Oh, you have to bring in a husband.
Reception for you and the two winners for poetry and short stories are yours, I emphasize, is the most important. So you come in tomorrow morning with, say, 6 chapter ideas, and we'll select the 3 best. Can you do that?
I think so.
Good.
It was a little bit condescending. Can you do that?
Yeah, acting like she's kind of like a little kid.
Yeah, a little bit.
And if you'll notice, she's still wearing her Sweet 16 dress.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that. Yeah. That's great.
So she's been wearing it for like 3 years, roughly.
Wow. Well, she still fits.
Yeah.
After a baby.
Now all that remains is your advance of $50.
What?
$50?
All right, so adjusted for inflation, because this is always interesting to me. It's about $1,350 in today's money, which is a pretty decent winning type of thing to, like, you know, she didn't even expect anything.
Right. Yeah, and then she gets, I think, $250 prize plus the royalties.
Yeah, he goes on.
It's quite usual, I assure you. Your fee, or your prize money, however you wish to think of it, will be $250. And there will, of course, be royalties later on, if it sells well enough.
It's like a career. So $250 is roughly $6,700. So, you know, it's a good amount of money. I mean, it's for someone who's really kind of seemed like she just brought it up as a hobby. You know, she kind of fell backwards into something, which is great. They're also putting her up in a room, which I was like, and paying for like room service and everything else. It just seems kind of a little unorthodox, but it's like a suite as well. This isn't like a 2-room hotel.
Right. And her whole life, you know, she's lived in that one room with her, all of her brothers and sisters.
Yeah. And now she has like wallpaper and crown molding. It's kind of like, she's like, what am I going to do with all this? And she's with Jenny. I thought it was nice that she brought Jenny. Although Jenny doesn't really add so much to the plot while they are away. She adds a little bit here and there, but I don't know. I don't know how I feel about her being there. So here, they're talking about the room.
For now, we thought you might prefer working here.
It's very nice.
Well, our offices can get pretty hectic. You'll concentrate better, I think.
I don't have this much privacy at home.
You'll find everything you need. Pens, pencils, paper, dictionary. Now, all your expenses here are paid, including meals taken in the hotel, restaurant, or room service. All you need to do is sign. An added 10% tip is customary.
I'm going to be absolutely spoiled.
Now, I have to wonder if... All right, so tipping. You know, tipping is one of these things that I'm sure has changed over time. But I wonder if a 10% tip was customary in 1883, or was it more customary in 1983? Now it's 15 to 20.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't really know.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure either. So I guess tipping has always been a thing, but I just never really thought about it being a percentage before modern times. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't think that it would be, but I guess it might be because, you know, people used to know how to do math in their head and stuff.
Yeah, and 10% is an easy one.
Right. Well, and you know, did you notice the hotel they're staying at was the Carlton?
No, it is?
Yeah, and that's what it says on the outside. And that makes me think of maybe the Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah.
To show how luxurious. But the first Ritz-Carlton wasn't open until 1911.
Oh, that's interesting. So, is there, I guess this was a booming city at the time. I mean, for them to have this level of a hotel. I'm sure Carlton.
Yeah, it would have had to have been.
Say it again, I'm sorry.
I said, yeah, it would have had to have been.
Yeah. I guess, that's a really great catch. I really didn't catch that at all. So they go on, they're just kind of yammering on about things.
Why?
Well, because it feels marvelous.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. He's giving advice on her spending money.
The quality of a writer's work. Comfort, therefore, becomes a necessity.
Well, I won't argue the point.
Good. Would you mind a little personal advice?
No.
Take a small part of that $50 and buy yourself something frivolous.
Why?
Well, because it feels marvelous. And because you should get used to that feeling.
So Laura buys the weirdest thing. She buys a jet ski. Strange, right? Like, look what I got, Jenny. I got you a jet ski, too.
Like, buy yourself a new dress.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think it's good advice, too, when, you know, when you're getting this kind of windfall, like, why not, you know, just kind of treat yourself to something. You know, it's money that you didn't even know you had. Found money. Jenny is super excited, and everything is just kind of exciting. I'll play some of that.
Aren't you excited?
Yeah.
But I'm a little scared.
I think she's scared of the bidet, maybe. Do they have... I'd be afraid of that, too. But, you know, I would imagine they would have an inside-out house, right?
I would assume.
I don't know if that's so fancy that they didn't even know what that is. Or maybe, you know what, maybe the little house has an inside-out house nowadays, too.
Yeah, that's where it went.
Yeah. Went right indoors, right behind the kitchen or something.
Well, on Dr. Quinn, they have one.
Do they? No, don't they have an outhouse?
Well, when Sully builds their new house, it's an inside bathroom, right?
You know, I don't recall there being a bathroom.
It's like on the side of the house, isn't it?
You know what? You're right. It's like it's basically an outhouse, but it's attached to the house, right?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, yeah. With a bucket underneath or something. So I have to mention Dr. Quinn cast, you know, if that's something that people have an interest in. Marissa is also a fan of Dr. Quinn, medicine woman. And yeah, we've been having a lot of fun on that show. You know, it's definitely something I think Little House fans would enjoy, Dr. Quinn. And you certainly did. You jumped right into it.
Yeah, thanks to you and Kelly.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
Watching, and now I've watched it 2 times all the way through and spend every free moment I have listening to that podcast.
And it's like, well, here's one of the little things just for fun.
How about you shut up?
And of course, that's Horace. I believe that was at the end of the world, and where Hank says, "What are you going to drink, Knothead?" And he goes, "Why don't you shut up?" He's having sarsaparilla. People are like, oh my God, he's talking about Dr. Quinn cast again.
It's hard not to go over to it, though, you know?
You want to see the two worlds kind of collide a little bit. It would be nice. I mean, we have Johnny Cash throughout Dr. Quinn cast. I mean, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Yeah.
I do that also. It makes me feel a little narcissistic. When I see Little House on the Prairie, and I'll sometimes say Walnut Grove cast, and it's like, no, I understand it's not. It's different. One's the show, and one is not the show. But I always feel like a dope when I do that. Thanks for nothing. All right.
Shut up, Mark.
Exactly. So here we are. We're in the office. Laura brings her homework to, this guy has a great name, Amos L. Broxton. Surprised it's not like the third or something.
Well, they're all excellent choices, I must say.
Thank you.
Especially the one about the long rifle. That's exactly what this book needs, wouldn't you say, Russell?
It's the one I'd choose, yes. And also the one about the bears and the harvest.
That's exactly why Russell will always have job security in my company. We think alike.
Well, not always. Now and again, you're wrong.
Womp womp. Yeah, it's such a weird dynamic between these two. They seem to really, really like each other, but also, I don't know, I think Russell kind of hates him.
Yeah, I think he kind of wishes that he had that kind of notoriety in the company.
Maybe. It feels like he has a lot of power, though.
Yeah.
Yes, I dare say. You go right ahead with those 3 chapters. And now there's still the question of your contract.
Now, this is the most shrewd thing that I think that we could even imagine from Laura. I think, anyway. I was really surprised by this particular scene.
Have you read it over thoroughly?
Twice.
It's a good thing I had that dictionary.
And are you now satisfied?
Well, there is one small thing.
Oh, just one? It wouldn't be more money by any chance, would it?
Not at all. Let me find it. Here it is.
The guy's like...
All changes in the manuscript shall be made at the sole discretion of the publisher. Does that mean I wouldn't be consulted about any changes?
Of course not.
On the other hand, it doesn't mean that she would be either.
Russell!
Now, come on, Broxton. Mrs. Wilder isn't the first one to pick that out of the fine print. I wouldn't want it in any contract of mine.
It's a good thing you're an awful writer, Russell. But she's negotiating a contract on her own. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, and interestingly, I don't think she would have been able to do this in the 1800s, not as a married woman.
You mean be published and stuff?
No, to sign a contract. I think Manly would have had to sign for her.
I'm not sure about that, but it's interesting. I guess it would depend on the laws of the area or of the state.
Yeah, because, you know, they had that episode later on. Or no, was that before this? I can't remember. But where Ma and all the women in town were like...
That was before this, yeah.
They were trying to get rods to do stuff like that.
Hmm. Yeah, that was definitely before this, but yeah, that's when Ma and Pa were still in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've moved on. They're in the big city now with Albert doing morphine. Poor Albert.
Oh, very well. I mean, it isn't important.
Very well.
We always work very closely with our writers, and there's never been any serious problem.
Oh, I'm sure of that. I just feel better, that's all.
Okay, let's have that.
So he scratches it out, initials it, and gets her signature. Kind of amazing. Good for you, Laura. So Laura comes in. She actually has bought... Jenny, I can't remember her name all of a sudden. She bought Jenny a really cute straw hat, and she bought herself earrings, and got her ears pierced, even. Now, she's wearing earrings. I don't know if you notice this. When she shows the earrings, they look like maybe they're pearl earrings, right? Or something like, or maybe they could be gold studs, I guess. But... they're kind of white, and then later on she's wearing another pair of earrings that have, like, it almost looks like there's a cameo in the middle of a black backing. So they changed out the earrings at some point, or she's wearing different earrings, which is possible.
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
I took screenshots, of course. It's like basically the whole show is in screenshots, but she goes on, she spent $6 on the earrings, which... you know, I would say it's not excessive. Although, it is a lot of money. It's like $150, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot for her.
Yeah. But she deserves a little treat.
Yeah, for all her hard work.
Yeah, for those 4 weeks of work.
She's like, well, Manly never buys me anything that's nice.
She just buys me a plow. So... but I thought, has she ever worn earrings? I have to see this, knowing that her ears are officially pierced in this episode, I have to look back and see if there's ever any earrings in her ears throughout the seasons.
I don't recall her ever wearing them.
Yeah, me either. Did Ma, Caroline, do you know?
I don't think so. Didn't they make a comment one time, like, that she always had her hair covering her ears?
She couldn't have always had it like that, though. I guess
we wouldn't see. You know, maybe women didn't wear earrings because of their bonnets. Or maybe it's less noticeable.
Hmm. It's a new thing to look for. Laura finished her manuscript completely, and I think we're to believe this is about 2 weeks later. Yeah, we do know it's 2 weeks later. She goes into the office to hand it to, I forgot his name. Broxton, right?
Mm-hmm.
To give it to Amos Broxton, but he's not there. So she goes in to hand it into Mr. Matthew, who's just kind of hanging around Mad Men style, having some scotch in the office and his feet up, and I'm surprised he's not smoking a cigar or something.
Well, well.
Am I disturbing you?
Yes, and I'm glad. I've just been involved in some extracurricular literary activity, and I'm not in the mood for it. Russell Matthews' great American novel.
I really like this actor, though. You know, I have no complaint about... I mean, the character's a little skeevy and stuff, but I do like the actor a lot. I have to see if he did anything.
Hartwell.
Yeah.
Been fiddling with it ever since I left Yale Graduate School. May I offer you a drink?
No, thank you.
Then you won't mind if I offer myself another.
Of course not.
Have a seat. So, what brings you here at this hour?
Well, it's going to sound silly, but I finished my last chapter and I just had to bring it right in.
No, that's not the least bit silly. I've never met a new young writer who wasn't exactly the same way. Broxton must be pleased.
He'd already left.
Oh, well then just leave it with me.
So he's really kind of sloshed. I mean, he's really laying on the, being kind of boozed up really well, actually. Lawrence seems pretty comfortable, though, around him. There's a lot of trust, I think, in this relationship.
Yeah, I don't think I would be that comfortable around him, just knowing how much that he's drinking.
Well, so far she's only really seen him drink one glass, though. But, I mean, he's going to keep drinking, we learn.
That's true.
And he does put her in what I think is a really, really uncomfortable situation. And I'm just going to play it.
That sounds exciting.
He's talking about a book that he's writing and says what it's all about. And he's kind of a failed author in a lot of ways because he's just not committed to finishing his work, I guess, maybe.
What'll really be exciting is if I ever finish it. Look here, I am sorry that you're married.
What?
Exactly. We were all like, right? Did you rewind this part? And it's like, what did he just say?
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a weird line as well. Like, here I am just sitting, regretting that you're married or being sorry that you're married. It's just a weird line.
It's weird to think that somebody would say that to someone, you know, just in regular conversation.
Well, I mean, he is, we do learn that he's pretty loaded, so it makes sense, but, you know.
You absolutely couldn't get rid of me.
Mr. Matthews.
No. I'm perfectly harmless. And I always say what I mean, especially after a couple of drinks. Have dinner with me.
No, thank you. My niece is expecting me for dinner.
Now, initially, what I meant by putting her in an awkward or uncomfortable situation was, of course, him making this really inappropriate comment. And this, I think, is worse in some ways because he at least backpedaled really quickly and he's just like, all right, look, I'm not going to keep pushing it. But he's not taking no for an answer. And I don't know. This type of stuff is just really, really cringy to me.
Mm-hmm. I'll call her to have her use room service. She won't mind just this once.
No, really. As you pointed out, I am a married woman.
Young lady, I offered you a dinner invitation and nothing more. Now, you have been cooped up with all your obligations for close to 2 weeks. It's time you had an evening out on your own. And you must be bored to death with that hotel restaurant. So I'll take you someplace special. Someplace where if we see any of my friends, they'll wonder where on earth did I find such a beautiful young lady.
That's not creepy at all. Not at all.
Do you get serial killer vibes from him?
You know, I don't get serial killer vibes, really. But I get like he's going to, you know, I don't know, he's going to go for the kiss or something. He's going to do the lean in. And yeah, I definitely got all those vibes, but I didn't get the whole serial killer, which is why he probably is a serial killer. Because
I mean, if you listen to it out of context, it sounds, I mean, he says, I'm absolutely harmless and I won't take no for an answer.
Yeah. Young lady. Yeah. And she's...
Really, Mr. Matthews?
No, go on. I won't take no for an answer.
And he offers her this huge contraption, which is called a telephone. And it's like, what? Thing is huge. And
this place is super like luxury though, because they have one on his desk and one on Mr. Broxton's desk.
Yeah, I mean, this guy has to, when we learn how much money he makes, I'm kind of surprised in comparison. Like, well, actually we don't know how much the other guy makes, but I guess in comparison to the prize money, how much he makes per week, he makes 20 a week, which is about five and change a week, you know, in today's money. He just seems like more executive to me.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think Laura is at all flattered here? Because she is like smiling at the end.
I don't know. I mean, I think she likes the attention, but she's probably not really interested, you know?
Yeah, I don't think she's legitimately interested. I mean, how could she be? She's manly at home, you know, wearing the apron and everything. And you know what? That's another thing, is we have Manly at home who's just tending to the baby, you know? She, you know, it just seems like she should have left Jenny at home to help out with the baby.
Yeah, it would have made more sense.
Yeah, definitely. So they go into this restaurant, Hugo's Cafe, and again, we're rich with ferns. We have ferns everywhere. It's, you know, it's a good restaurant. There's a fern, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. And they're just, you know, it's a nice restaurant, it looks like, and they're having some dinner chatter.
Master's and I knew PhD.
What's wrong with that?
Well, after all, I wasn't training for the medical or legal professions.
And his whole drunkenness is totally amplified at this point, right?
Right.
Laura actually, I guess she asks questions that a lot of people might not be able to ask, right? And she asks about his drinking, which I was really kind of surprised about.
As well as teaching. Which, by the way, was beginning to wear thin. So I shopped around and finally came with Broxton's firm, and I've been there ever since.
There you are, sir. Was everything all right?
Yes, thank you.
Good. Thank you, Hugo.
Mr. Matthews.
Why don't we get on a first name basis?
This, I mean, I guess here, this is where I thought he was going to try to get closer to her.
Mm-hmm.
But it, I don't know. We never see that happen. So we can't really hate the guy so much for being a little creepy, I guess. But yeah. At least he didn't, like, make a physical advance. At least.
Hey, if you'll notice, at 2610, Laura gives a really scared smile.
Oh, really? All right. When I get
to... I don't mind Russell, and I'd enjoy calling you Laura.
Well, that's fine with me. Russell, can I ask you a personal question?
Well, you're free to try.
Do you always drink that much?
Yes. Yes, say I do, yeah.
Why?
Well, I find it agreeable. Does it offend you?
You know what's interesting, and you may know this, before the Prohibition, people drank a lot. And when I say a lot, I mean like a gallon of alcohol, like of strong alcohol in a short amount of time. It wasn't until the Prohibition that there was, after the Prohibition, that people were moderating themselves a little bit. It's a weird thing, because I think we forget that the entire culture was really, really based on just drinking and drinking and drinking and... just amazing. And this touches upon that a little, I guess. It was just kind of socially accepted to be drunk as long as you look okay.
Oh, no, no, not at all. It's just that I'd never seen anyone who... Well, actually, there was Mr. Edwards until he quit.
You never want to be compared to Edwards, right? You know?
It almost ruined his life.
Well, let me reassure you that it's not ruining mine. You see, I have a firm rule. Never to begin drinking until between 5 and 6 in the evening. And not to stop until I retire at night.
That was the scared smile. It's perfect. She does. She's like, oh, that's sad. Like, that's horrifying. Yeah, this poor guy. He also drops another bomb at the end of the dinner.
Well, I imagine you miss your family being away so long.
Oh, yes, very much. Although keeping busy did help. But now that the book's finished...
The book isn't finished. Those ominous changes you were concerned about?
Are there a lot?
Oh, nothing. Nothing to be worrying over. Now, we'd better eat or we'll hurt Hugo's feelings.
Poor Hugo. So, yeah, I mean, at first I was like, why are they keeping her there? It didn't make a lot of sense to me. Were you following it at this point? Were you catching on to it? I just didn't get it.
Yeah, I didn't really understand either why she had to be there so long, you know?
They're telling her she needs to enhance the stories, and she's like, but Rose isn't old enough to help me yet. And which is, you know, a lot of the fact of the matter is a lot of the things that would end up being written in all of these books, in particular Little House in the Big Woods, was really, it had the fingerprints of her daughter, Rose, all over it, and who was a famous journalist before the book even was published, which is kind of remarkable. So I don't know if anything like this ever happened. I don't think it did.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Rose is meant to be compared to Mr. Matthews in a way, as far as the editing.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that. But I think that Laura enjoyed the edits that were made. She doesn't seem so crazy about the edits that Matthew is making.
Yeah, I agree.
But they're struggling. They're kind of getting through this stuff. Let's see. They start talking about... I'll just play this clip. They're kind of in the office talking more about the edits of the book.
That was an excellent performance.
Well, I'm sorry. This is after. He said, you have to make these changes, and this kind of is where the scam kind of comes out. This is why we learn why they're kind of keeping her there.
I've never seen you better. Thank you. I felt it was necessary. I don't want her giving us trouble. Once we hold that press conference, we're committed to a full advertising campaign.
Amos has like a really nice ascot that's like kind of silky with like a little thing in the middle. I could see Hank wearing something like that.
Yeah, I could see that too.
Yeah, totally.
And if she decides to have second thoughts, well, with that clause in her contract, then maybe we should leave the book alone. What? It's been on my mind for a while. There's something about the way her stories are told. There's a gentleness, a deep innocence that I find intensely original. Maybe we should simply make sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and take our chances with the book as is.
So this gets shot down like there's no tomorrow. I know Amos would make a great butler, right? He just looks like he should be on, what was that show on the BBC? Downton Abbey. He looks like he should be on there as one of the butlers. So Almanzo gets a letter for an update. He's just kind of hammering away. I don't know where the baby is, you know, like just kind of like hanging out in the house, I guess. Mrs. Whipple comes all the way in for a special delivery.
A letter from Laura.
Oh, that's a surprise. She's due home tomorrow.
Oh, probably just homesick.
You're probably right. Thank you, Mrs. Foster.
You're welcome.
I'm just going to go walk 3 miles back. Don't offer me a ride. Actually,
you know, you said Mrs. Whipple, it's Mrs. Foster.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Habits. I also don't think this is at the homestead. I thought this was at the homestead, but now I see he was working on a water wheel. So I'm going to assume this is at the mill or something. That's a lot smaller than the mill's normal one. Yeah, Mrs. Foster. Her real last name is Foster, the actress.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever looked on IMDb, but they credit her as being Melinda Foster. But in a different episode, Harriet says that she's Matilda.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if that was like a flub or something like that, or even a typo.
Yeah, probably. It was the Enchanted Cottage episode.
Oh, that's funny. That's a great fact. Thank you. But here, we get another voiceover. Amanda's not the type to use a letter opener, by the way. He's having a hard time opening that envelope. And you notice he's not wearing a wedding ring, and that's something that, I don't know, is that something that, I might have even discussed this in the past, I don't know if the men wear wedding rings at this, I have to pay more attention.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Dearest Almanzo, the changes are taking longer than I thought. It could be another 2 weeks. I miss you, so please try to understand. Give Rose a kiss for me. I love you.
And in total manly fashion, he's just like, "Ah, that's my girl." You know, like he's just smiling. He's proud of her. And I don't know. He just makes us all warm and fuzzy. I think that Dean Butler's always great on camera. And it's just always fun to watch. Even if it's a dopey little scene that doesn't really go anywhere.
You know, that letter was a lot longer, though, than what she read.
It had to be, right? That was censored for us. It's like, this guy's being a creep. Also, did they ever mention what time of the year this is? Because I don't think they do.
No, but at the beginning, when she was meeting the publisher, she said that he couldn't come because it was planting season. And I looked on the internet and it said the planting season for Walnut Grove, Minnesota outdoor plants is June, July, and early August.
Oh, okay. So summer. Yeah. Because he has a calendar in his office. And I'm like, all right, this is supposed to be 1883. So I went and looked it up and this would be November, if that's the case.
Oh, well, it could be that.
Yeah. Or it could be an old calendar. That's what I do. I put up a calendar, I never flip it. So it's possible.
The problem is, I thought I knew what you and Mr. Broxton wanted. But when it comes to actually writing that way, well, I'm sorry, I really am.
She's really just complaining at this point. Like, I just want to go home. This sucks. Being a writer is terrible. I was told this would be much better and easier. Mr. Matthew decides to write it for her. And this did not sit well with me at all. Mm-mm. I cannot imagine that the Laura that we know and love would ever allow somebody else to do her work.
No, I can't see her doing that either.
I mean, it's open, like it's not like it's a secret, but I don't know.
Just going with her character, she's so independent, it doesn't seem like she would allow it.
Yeah, but you know, she does look like she's getting beaten down. She's kind of like rubbing her own shoulder and she's like, I'm tired of writing, you know, carpal tunnel. And so yeah, she's reading the next day, I think it is that they say. I don't know how fast this guy writes, but here they go.
It's very skillfully done. Certainly a lot more exciting than the original.
Exactly. But it's still the story that you wrote.
Ish.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
And quite frankly, I wouldn't change a word of it. How do you feel, Mrs. Wiley?
Well,
in this scene, her
truthful.
Her face looks dirty. I don't know why. But I'd like you to go back and just see what you think of that. It just looks like it's dusty or something. I can't explain it.
Like the time she got ink on it when she was fighting with Brendison Longworth.
Yeah, this looks like she was out, like, you know, milking the cow and the hay, playing with the hay, whatever you do with hay. You're baling hay.
It's very difficult to find the words to describe it.
Excellent, excellent, if I may.
Yeah, there was she fought with Brenda Sue? Was that it?
Yeah,
no.
Divorce.
Yeah, and she gets all the ink all over her face. This is like one of the funniest things.
Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago in the world of Little House on the Prairie, right? I think it was just last season.
Yeah. I think it was season 7, maybe?
Oh, really? That long ago? Wow.
Miss Prentice, have this rushed into Gully Proofs right away.
Of course, Mr. Broxton.
Now, I have a suggestion to make, and I hope you both will agree with me. My suggestion is that Russell continue reworking the rest of the book, subject, as always, to any comments that Mrs. Wilder may have.
That's fine with me.
See, what I have here is a fine, fine writing team. Things sometimes work that way. The collaborative effort is the most effective. Naturally, only Laura Ingalls Wilder will be listed as the author.
No, I just looked up the character of Russell Matthews, whose real name is John Bennett Perry. And he was actually in another episode of Little House. And I just scrolled away from it. I'm looking for it. He's been in quite a bit of things. But he was also in The Aftermath in 1977. He plays Andrew Hobbs / Frank James.
I thought he looked kind of familiar.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big difference, 6 years apart, these episodes, but kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. I always like it when we get multiple usage of actors. It's almost like Michael Lenz, like, I told you I'd put you back in.
Yeah.
So Laura's just kind of, she's losing control. That's kind of the feeling that I get. But she's also kind of given up a little bit, which is just, we don't want to see that. She starts working with Mr. Matthew on the book. And this is where it was interesting. He made a promise not to drink during this writing session, which I think is fair. And I thought he was going to try to kind of get closer to her and to like hit on her, but this never happens. It was almost like it was part of the story, but then they took it out.
Maybe they just didn't want to take it too far.
It's possible.
It was quite an experience watching Russell work. He knew exactly what he was doing. And true to his word, he never took a drink until he was finished for the day.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty, it's a noble thing for him to do. Clearly, he was able to just stop drinking, so he's one of these people who, he might have a drinking problem, but he can stop, so that's good.
Cough, cough, not Jake.
Not Jake. Yeah, Jake.
Dr. Quinn reference.
Yeah, Jake's kind of like, you know, drinking the aftershave and the Barbicide. Ugh, it's a painful episode. It's a painful show. We get a Jenny critique, which I think is pretty interesting.
Before we get too far away from it,
yeah.
Did you notice that the calendar said the Territorian on it?
I did look at that. I did a quick search, but I didn't find very much. Did you?
No, I didn't find anything on it either.
There is a book that I found called The Territorian from this kind of period that's a Western, but it looks like it has nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't know that. I don't think I think it was just a word that's used. I did find other uses of the word. It's not a word that I would have ever used for anything, but
yeah.
I think in Westerns, maybe it's used very often. I'm really new to Westerns. I think Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman is about as Western as I get. Or like Young Guns or something. I don't know if you ever saw that. But
yeah.
So yeah, I don't get too much into Westerns. Like you do.
Just Dr. Quinn and Little House for me.
Yeah. And Young Guns.
I actually have not watched
that. I know, I'm just kidding. You gotta see it. You have to see Young Guns. Did you ever see the movie Lost Boys? The Lost Boys?
No.
Oh, Kelly didn't either. And it's one of those things. And this is a Dr. Quinn moment. We have Wolf. You know, Wolf is Sully's dog. And it's the same dog that's in the movie The Lost Boys who plays Nanook. So if you're a fan of The Lost Boys, you know exactly the big deal because it's a vampire movie and Nanook kind of protects Corey Haim. And it's just really great. But it's incredible that it's the same dog actor. And it's like a good 7 years apart.
Is it Cody?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there's another dog, and then there's the stunt dog named King, which we have kind of an ongoing joke that it's kind of like the mean version of the dog. Kind of like, he doesn't play with balls, or he doesn't like treats, he's like, eats cigarettes. Just a mean dog.
King's just feeding him under the table.
Yeah, well, he'll bite you. You know, like, you can't feed him by hand, so he'll just, like, nip you.
Yes.
But yeah, so Jenny has an opinion, and I can't say I disagree with this opinion, but I kind of think, I don't know, it seems pretty dramatic to me.
I finished it.
Well?
It's very different.
Well, that's what I thought. But Mr. Matthews and Mr. Broxton don't think so.
Well, I'm sure it'll be a big success, but I don't know any of these people. The way that you wrote about them, I could see them and feel them.
Go on, Jenny, please.
The way it is now. Wait, Laura, how can you even think of allowing your name on that book? It's a lie!
Now, I don't know. This is a bit much to me because it's a book, right? And we also know for a fact that a lot of these stories were a bit embellished in the original book. I mean, it's a kid's book. It's meant to be entertaining, and it just seems kind of harsh, I guess, coming from her. While honest, harsh.
It makes you wonder kind of what did they write in there that Jenny thinks it's such a lie?
Yeah, right? It's kind of like, yeah, you can only imagine. But yeah, I bet you Laura's like, I wish I left you at home. You go order room service in there. I don't want any more bacon cheeseburgers. You know, whatever they're eating. By the way, I can never get tired of having unlimited room service. I'm sorry. Like, I get to sit here and you're going to bring me food? Cooked? Like, and it probably has like those nice domes, you know? No way.
It's like historical DoorDash or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. I know I shouldn't say anything like that, but it's true.
It's called dramatized nonfiction. It's a new genre. That's all she has to really say. They're at the award ceremony. Which is kind of cool. Like, we see a couple modern things that we don't always see in Little House. Like the flash, when they take a photograph and they have the gunpowder in the flash. And it's like, poof. Yeah, it's always fun to see. It always makes you wonder, like, how many accidents happen because of things like that. I mean, those things have to be super flammable. It's crazy.
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah. But it's...
No, I hate to...
I'm sorry, go on.
Sorry.
No, go.
I was going to say, I hate to bring up Dr. Quinn again, but this camera doesn't look anything like the one in the Portraits episode, does it?
Well, the Portraits episode was a real specialized piece of hardware. I mean, that's... I want to call him Willie Nelson, but it's the other country singer.
Kenny Rogers.
Kenny Rogers. I almost said Dolly Parton, because he did like a duet with Dolly Parton. But... Again, I don't know much about Kenny Rogers. He was fun in that episode. But yeah, he plays a photographer He's taking pictures of everyone. I thought that was a good episode, actually.
Mm-hmm. And the winner of first prize for poetry, Mr. Robert Holmes.
I love this guy's speech. It's pretty much how I would be if I won anything on and I had to stand in front of people.
Thank you. It's hard to know what, but just
very good. You. Very good. So this is like a really kind of swanky place, right? I mean, there's art on the walls and it's a great set. They have plants and everything.
Yeah, it's definitely ritzy.
Have you ever heard this kid? I played this once on Dr. Quinn. I'm just going to play it for you. That guy really reminds me of this kid who... I'm just going to play it.
Have you ever had a dream that you had you want him to do you so much you could do anything?
So it's a cute little kid. So that's what that guy kind of reminded me of. And that kid isn't like stuttering or anything like that. I'm not making fun of anyone, but it's just you know, when you kind of can't get it out, you've listened to this podcast. That's me, like every 15 minutes.
I'm the same way.
No, you're pretty good, I think.
Sometimes you just start a sentence and you don't know where it's going. Oh, yeah. And respond to it.
Been there. Your audio's dropping again a little bit.
Sorry, I said, have you seen that episode of The Office?
Which episode?
Where he's like, sometimes you just start a sentence and you don't know where it's going.
Yeah, and that pretty much is the antithesis of Michael, right? I mean, he's just always just going on and on and on.
Right.
But so we're at the award show. Mr. Matthews waiting. He's like, oh my god, where is she? She finally comes in. Jenny's wearing her straw hat. It's amazing.
Where on earth have you been?
I'm sorry, I've had a very difficult decision.
Come on, you're keeping the entire room waiting.
No, please, I have to explain
something. You can tell me about it later. Come on, excuse me.
Ah, here she is now.
I was almost afraid you weren't coming.
Mr. Broxton, I'm sorry.
Perfectly all right. So long as you're here. Come on, Jenny, let's take a seat over here.
Now, they have really nice large plants here. They have palms, which I think are nice. I don't have plants in the house, too often. I just don't really like them. But I think these kind of things look really nice. And when she gets on stage, we get a beautiful shot of another fern. It's kind of like so much in the world of ferns. I don't really buy that there's so many ferns in the world. One of the things they added, which I thought would be kind of accurate, is the entire room is full of basically like society people, and you have an African-American couple who's very well dressed, and I would imagine there would have some level of it would be representation of all cultures at a place like this in this type of contest. So again, like, probably more accurate than not.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the winner of first prize for the novel, Laura Ingalls Wilder.
I'm sure Mrs. Wilder has a few things to say.
Maybe you should have waited a few minutes to take that picture, though. Well, talk. Like, they faded the music, they dimmed the lights, they put a spotlight on.
Finding myself in the middle of the successful world of publishing, with all the talk of possible money, fame. It's a very hard thing for a simple girl from the country to deal with.
And this is where she has the earrings on, which are just, they're definitely different than the one she showed us before.
There's a feeling of confusion that I've never known before. All of a sudden, nothing simple. Nothing at all. It's even hard to tell what's really right. Most especially, putting my name on a book that really isn't mine anymore.
What?
And accepting money for that. I'm sorry. That's all I can say. Please excuse me.
So she's rejecting it. She's throwing it in their faces. I'm surprised that they wouldn't sue her, to be honest with you.
Right, because she signed the contract.
Yeah, I would say because she signed the contract, and also doing this public display is kind of, it has to be a little bit hurtful to the company and their credibility.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't they kind of question that? So here's some of the repercussions.
Young lady, am I to understand from that peculiar speech you just delivered that you are backing out of this?
Yes, Mr. Broxton. And I can't tell you how sorry I am.
Then why on earth couldn't you have reached that decision before now?
Well, I tried to explain it to both of you before you put me up in front of all those people.
Don't you think she should have said something beforehand?
Yeah, I mean, even the day before or...
Yeah, or like...
It doesn't have to be now.
An hour ago, you know.
Yeah.
Show up a little early. How about that?
All right, all right. You've absolutely made up your mind.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
So, I mean, she returns the money that wasn't spent, which I thought is fine. And they kind of take it as a loss. Like, they're not making her pay back the hotel or anything.
Yeah. And, you know, she says, I'll repay the cash advance. Mm-hmm. And I feel like she's signing Manly up for years of work to repay that $10+.
It's okay. He's a hard worker. So Mr. Matthew is kind of furious. He kind of goes up to her and gives her a piece of his mind.
There's something I'd like to say, if you don't mind.
I think I'll wait downstairs.
Run along.
If you look closely, you see her slip Laura a pair of brass knuckles. You never know how things are going to go. You know. Jenny's a tough,
what
tough
is it?
Kid.
Listen, I know Broxton too well. He's not saying a word to his new young author till there's been time for you to reconsider. And I beg you to do so.
Russell, the decision's already been made.
You're a fool. You know that? A fool.
I know what a success that book can be. I can smell it. And you're just going to throw it all away. A chance I'd give anything to have just once. And you throw it away.
I don't understand.
Now, Laura's about to put on a different hat. She's going to put on her therapist hat. Which I don't know if we've seen this too often. Maybe when she tried to get Isaiah to sober up. But we don't see it too often.
You can do anything you want to. You can reach any heights. Russell, I know how well you write. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
It's true.
Of course. I'm a marvelously gifted writer, just as long as I'm redoing somebody else's material. Why do you think I spend my life cooped up in a musty office for $20 a week? Because in my entire life, I've never turned out one acceptable paragraph of my own. Do you have any idea what that has to feel like?
Champagne, sir?
Well,
madam,
could anything be more opportune? Yes, perhaps I shall. A fitting occasion, I must say, to break my rule. To you, dear Laura.
Go right ahead, if it'll help you wash down all your noble-sounding lies.
What?
The only reason why you drink is because you're afraid.
Afraid? Afraid of what?
To write. To do what you know you can do. Russell, that takes courage. To expose yourself to the world. I know. I was scared to death when I sent in my manuscript.
So somehow this gets through to him, and he puts the drink down, and he's like, I'm going to quit my job. Or, you know, and just kind of leave to write. It's kind of crazy. But here's the scene.
Russell, I need you in here.
Is that so?
Yes, that's so.
I'm sorry, Braxton, I'm busy.
With what?
I have a novel to finish. And I'm damn well gonna finish it.
Can't say damn. It's a family show.
You'll notice, I don't know if you're there yet, but Mr. Broxton's like putting his wine hands all over this new guy when they go back up to the stage.
Oh no. this guy is so happy. He's so lucky. He's Casey Johnson. He's the first place winner. And it's just funny. His speech is actually really funny.
Ladies and gentlemen, the new first place winner for the novel, Mr. Casey Johnson.
It fades out, but you have to listen kind of closely.
I'm very proud to win this award tonight. I certainly didn't expect to, but now that Laura didn't take it, well, I'll take the money and run.
And it kind of ends there until we get into, like, Funky Town. I forgot about this ending. Did you remember this ending?
Yeah, but I just watched the show, like, last year, so.
Oh, that's right. You're like, relatively new to television in general. I'm just kidding. You just got your first color TV.
Just this show.
I know.
I'm a young person.
I know. And I really appreciate the fact that younger generations are watching these older shows. And like something like Dr. Quinn, though, is a bit more of a modern take on a 19th century thing. But the fact that you still have a love of Little House is also a great thing.
Yeah.
But here we go. This is very strange. When I was a kid, I remember this episode being on syndication. I do not remember this ending at all, because I remember growing up with the conversation that the only time that we saw the modern world in Little House on the Prairie is the episode where I'm terrible with titles, the one where Charles is selling furniture, and
right.
You know, they go to the auction, they buy the thing, and like, they see his initials in the table. But, yeah, so I don't know. But, yeah, we get this cool little Funky Town thing. And it's just worth it for the music alone. Kind of dated music, I do want to mention. 1983, this isn't exactly the kind of music you would normally hear. You know, this kind of stuff was already kind of left in the 70s. So it's kind of a weird choice. I'm waiting for, like, Michael Landon to come in singing or something. Little House on the Prairie! So this is what it would sound like. This is what the Little House, the David Rose Orchestra would sound like if the show was made 10 years later, essentially. We're following a little girl into the Tucson Public Library, and it's a girl, the camera's following her, it's a cute little scene, and she's looking through all of these books, and she gets to Little House on the Prairie, which of course I believe that's the third or fourth book, so it's kind of interesting that she wouldn't grab Little House in the Big Woods, but at the same time, it makes most sense because we are, in fact, watching Little House on the Prairie. And it's just a cute little girl. And do you know who the little girl is?
It's Michael Landon's daughter, Shauna.
That's right. And I just thought that was really great. I would say that this episode, for the first time ever, has two of Michael Landon's kids in it.
pretty interesting.
Yeah, and we even get a magical Michael Landon voiceover, which I was just like, where did he come from? I really did not expect that at all. So I'm just going to play that.
40 years later, Laura Ingalls Wilder finally had her first book published. It was only the first of many in the now famous Little House series that is so popular today. This time, no one made any changes.
This time.
Not entirely true, though, because you know Rose probably made a little bit of changes.
Yes. That's in my notes. I'm like, no one? Seriously? But, you know, I think that when you do read the books, you really can see, I've talked about this to the point where people just turn it off, but I have this feeling that I feel like three people wrote the books. I feel like you have Laura's basis of the story. You have Rose's colorful and overly descriptive moment. But then there's these other things where there's this other structure that really doesn't exist in Rose's writing, and it's a little too advanced to really be Laura Ingalls Wilder. So I don't know. I do have that opinion, and I brought that up to a historian not too long ago, and they said that there is another person involved in the books, and I forget the name right now. But so it's really weird, but at the same time, I think that what they ended up creating at the end of the day is a really great collection of books.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever wrote it doesn't really matter.
And you know, the first Little House book was published in 1932.
Yeah, it's amazing. Do you, you know, one thing I'm not 100% sure about is if the book was a success right away.
I don't know that either.
Yeah, I need to check that out. I'm just not 100% sure whether, you know, because of course other books would come out. I wonder if, you know, sometimes when the sequels come out, they become, the entire series would become more popular, but I don't know. I felt this was a really enjoyable episode. I really enjoyed the modern little moment at the very end. And another thing that I think that's interesting is that Shauna Landon was not even credited. They could have thrown her in there, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's not really fair since Leslie Landon gets credited.
Yeah, she gets credited in the beginning. They could have just kind of squeezed her in, been, you know, Leslie and Shauna, you know, that type of thing.
Maybe it's because it wasn't a speaking part.
Possible. You're not going to get into SAG that way.
And, you know, why did they choose to do it at the Tucson Public Library?
Yeah, I kind of thought that too. I was like, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
Like maybe the library in Walnut Grove or maybe Los Angeles because that's where they film.
Yeah, you would think, but no. The Tucson Public Library. Well, Marissa, I want to thank you so much for coming and talking about the episode. And I don't know, I had a lot of fun watching this one.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. And
thank you so much for listening.
Just please stay
on. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting Walnut Grovecast by heading over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast.